On Tuesday, August 13th at 10 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl presents bassist, composer, bandleader, and contender for the hardest working man in show business, Christian McBride. Join us as we check in and catch up. That's Tuesday, August 13th at 10 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones. And we've been revisited by Christian McBride. It's always good to have Christian on. As a matter of fact, I saw him this past Saturday at my first Montclair Jazz Festival. Had a wonderful time being treated by the ultra-talented Jazz House Kids and other performers, including former Sugar guests Joey DeFrancesco. I'd like to thank everyone who showed their support during the WBAI Summer Fun Drive. Thank you. Yay. And stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl, starting now.
What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I want some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar.
Joyce Jones.
Christian McBride! Hi.
As I live and breathe.
Hi!
How you doing?
I am wonderful.
Oh, great to hear your voice.
It is wonderful to hear your voice as well. And I'll try not to laugh as much as I usually do.
I like when you laugh. We need more of that in the world today.
Well, you're so funny, and you have such great energy, so I can't help but contain
myself. Oh, thank you, Joyce. I'll tell you, these folks are trying to make me change that, but I ain't going to let them win. What is going on, my friend?
This is essentially a catch-up.
Great.
What you've been up to. Initially, the reason why I wanted to get in touch, in addition to catching up with everything that you've done since you were last with us, the initial reason was to talk to you about Roy Hargrove.
Mm-hmm. My main man. don't think we need no more of that.
How did you wind up meeting each other? Did you meet each other in New York or what?
No. Meeting Roy is one of my favorite stories. I met Roy when I was in high school. Both of our high school big bands were in a national competition. This was in 1987. Downbeat Magazine, for 3 years, sponsored this national high school and college big band competition called Music Fest USA. And the first annual Music Fest was in Chicago. And, I mean, there were just hundreds of bands from around the country that got together for 3 days in Chicago, and we competed. They had, like, the Eastern Finals, the Southwestern Finals, the Western Finals, the Midwest. It was really great. Of course, at that time, word of mouth, that was the way. People heard about you. There was no Twitter. There was no YouTube at that time. So word had already gotten up to Philly about this trumpet player from Dallas who was going to be the next guy. And his name was Roy Hargrove. And so we went to Chicago, not only looking forward to competing in this competition, but specifically to hear Roy Hargrove because the buzz was out on him already. So our band competed. A couple of guys in the band saw the schedule for, like, the Southwest Regionals, and we ran down to the room where his high school was playing, and we heard this trumpet blaring out of the room, and we all looked at each other and said, that's got to be him. And we ran in the room, and there he was, the great Roy Hargrove, and I think at the time he was 17, either 17 or 18. Later that night, there was a jam session, and Roy, myself, and Joey DeFrancesco, we were like the first three at the jam session, and we played all night. Wow. And from that point on, Roy and I became tight buddies, and back in those days, you sent postcards or you sent letters, mm-hmm. you know. So the next year, Music Fest was in Orlando. By that time, Roy was a senior, I was a junior, and we all went down to Orlando, and oh, man, it was like we were old friends. You know, McBride, was that Roy? What's up, man? And I wound up hanging with his high school band more than I hung with my own.
Oh, wow.
Roy then graduated high school and then went to Berklee College of Music. He didn't stay long, though, because he started gigging with Bobby Watson and started showing up on all these records, and he very much was on his way to being the next guy. And the year after that, I left Philly to move to New York, and Roy and I just started keeping in touch. I don't even really remember how we kept in touch, because I surely didn't have a phone, because when I was going to Juilliard, I lived at the Y, and so he would call the Y and leave messages at the front desk, and I would have to call him back at a designated time because I don't think he had a phone either. I miss those days when you actually had to work
right.
to keep in touch with somebody,
right.
you know. It meant something, you know. Roy moved to New York, I think, in January of 90 or something like that. And we linked up, and Roy said, man, you're going to be in my band. I was like, all right, cool. No questions asked. That summer of 1990, I went to Europe with Roy's quintet.
Wow. You did a trio release. Was that the first time that you recorded together? That one with Christian Scott?
Stephen Scott.
No, Stephen Scott.
We recorded a bunch before then. The first time Roy and I recorded together was on his second CD, which is called Public Eye.
Okay.
With Stephen, Antonio Hart, and the great Billy Higgins on drums. And then we did a bunch of recordings as sidemen together. We did a recording with the great tenor saxophonist James Clay. We played on Stephen Scott's Verve debut album. Gosh, we did so much together. And then we toured together with the Jazz Futures. So, yeah, we did a bunch of stuff. Like, between 1990 and 1996, I mean, Roy and I were just, we were on all kinds of stuff together. And then, of course, he played on my debut album, Getting
right.
to It. And then after that, we did that Parker's Mood record with
okay.
Stephen.
Thank you.
my man.
Wow. Well, you answered my question about jam sessions that you had gone together. Did you go once you came to New York as well, or you were just too busy?
That's all we did.
Okay.
Well, no, when we're coming up the ladder, that's kind of how you get up the ladder. Mm-hmm. You go to jam sessions, you know, let people know you're there, and you're able to be successful in the rules that have been established at every jam session, you know, because every jam session has a different personality, you know, depending on who's running it. Certain songs are called in certain keys, and you got to be able to play them. And so Roy and I would show up at these jam sessions all the time. In fact, my first real steady gig in New York was with the alto saxophonist Jesse Davis. We used to play at Augie's, which is now known as Smoke.
Uh-huh.
And after the quintet would play two sets, it would turn into a jam session late at night. So Roy would come up there all the time, or we would go down to Bradley's, or we would go to the Village Gate, or wherever there was a jam happening, Roy and I would always show up. Now, I will say this. Roy had way more stamina than the rest of us.
Oh?
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, as a bass player, you got to play behind everybody.
Right.
You know? So I'm up there, and people always wonder why bass players don't like going to jam sessions, because there's always a line of, like, trumpet players, a line of alto saxophone players, a line of tenor saxophone players, a line of singers, a
right.
line of piano players, a line of drummers, and, like, one other bass player.
Oh, wow.
So you up there getting cramps, and, you know, your blisters are bleeding, and
right.
everybody's looking at you like, man, how come you don't want to play one more? It's like, dude, because my muscles are failing right now. That's why I don't want to play anymore.
Oh, my gosh. I spoke to Elion Henry, the one who's doing the film, the Pop Life film on Roy Hargrove. You know, I asked her who she had spoken to, and then she had mentioned she had spoken to you. So it was key that I talk to you as well.
Well, and, I'm glad you're talking to me.
And Roy Hargrove will definitely be missed. When was the last time you saw him?
Last year's Newport Jazz Festival.
Okay.
I brought him and his quintet up there. Yeah, that was the last time I saw him. And, I mean, I knew Roy had been fiercely battling a lot of health issues for a long time. But he always seemed, when things got bad or when things seemed to get dire, he always seemed to recover. And so I had no reason to think that he wouldn't do it again. You know, we actually saw each other in Europe last summer. We were supposed to do a co-bill together in Sète, France, and we got rained out. So we actually never played the gig, but we did wind up getting a chance to hang a little bit, and then Newport, and then that was it.
Thank you.
Well, Newport, you are now the musical director of that, yes?
Correct. Artistic director.
That's it. So how is that? This is probably your, what, second year? Third year?
Third year. That's right. It's been something. I'm still getting used to it, you know, being artistic director of the country's oldest and most mythical jazz festival. So that comes with a lot of pressure, a lot of responsibility, but it's been mostly smooth. You know, when I say mostly, it's because as a musician, I have very close relationships. Most of the bands that come through Newport, I can say I've been friends or have worked with almost 100% of them, right?
Right.
And so what happens is my musician friends who aren't on the festival, you know, they're like, yo, what's up, man? How come you ain't get me on the festival? I'm like, yo, don't worry. It's only a matter of time.
Right.
It's only a matter of time. You know, so that part has been a bit of an adjustment, you know. It's been less of that and more of a positive thing.
Sure.
You know.
And you can't have everybody on the first year or the second year or the third year.
Right.
So give it time.
In fact, I mentioned this in the documentary, which kind of made me sad. And I guess this comes as part of the territory as well. Roy was actually upset with me because of his time slot on the festival.
Oh. Oh, my.
He's like, come on, man. Why you got me on so early?
Oh.
I said, now see, everybody's mad at me because they're not on the festival. The next group of people are mad at me because they're not on the big stage.
Oh.
Now you got somebody like you. You mad at me. You're on the main stage, but you mad because of your time slot.
Oh,
on
my
the main
gosh.
Stage. I'm like, come on, bro. Give me a break.
At least
but,
you got
it was
there.
All good because he played a great set. And after the set was over, he gave me a big hug. And
yippee!
All the guys in the band were like, you know, look, it's all good, man. Don't sweat that, you know.
Excellent. This musical director life. The last time I talked to you, it was the first time you were doing a Kennedy Center.
That's right.
Event for Sonny Rollins.
Which I also had Roy on.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, Roy has been like we've been so close on so many levels for so many years, you know. Anytime I had something big like that and I needed a trumpet player, you know, Roy was the no-brainer. I got to call my man, you know.
Wow. So since you did that and that went off swimmingly, you've been doing these events. Okay, you're the artistic director at the Newport Jazz. You have something to do. Are you an artistic director at TD?
Yes, at NJPAC.
Yes, NJPAC.
Yeah.
The, what is it, TD? It's a
the,
bank.
James company. Moody Jazz Festival.
James Moody, thank you. Yeah, I don't even have to mention TD. James Moody Jazz Festival.
Well, but it's nice if you do. They're the title sponsors, so yeah, we will mention TD. TD, hi TD, TD, all day long.
But that is also an artistic director title as well, yes? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, wow, so you have that hat twice. Newport is hard enough, but NJPAC too. How is it wearing the hat for that one?
The NJPAC one, that's been going on now for, this is my 7th year as artistic director. And all of these degrees of separation are pretty close because the CEO of NJPAC, John Schreiber, worked for George Wein for many years. That's how I first met John. And John took over NJPAC, I believe, in 2011. And when he started to build his programs and he wanted an artistic director for jazz, he called me and I was quite flattered. At that time, I had just completed my 4-year run as artistic director for jazz programming with the Los Angeles Philharmonic.
Right.
So NJPAC has been wonderful. We've done some really, really, really good shows out there, and I think it's revitalized the city quite a bit. NJPAC already did that upon their opening in 1997. But when John Schreiber came, he gave it some new blood, and Newark is just like, it seems to be booming now. And I credit a lot of that to NJPAC, and specifically what John has done with NJPAC. Just gave it some new blood, and he's brought in a really incredible team of people. And we've had some quite memorable shows out there.
You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar My Bowl is the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones, and our guest for this evening is bassist, composer, band leader, and, as mentioned, really a contender for the Hardest Working Man in Show Business title, Christian McBride. What you're listening to in the background is Wayne Shorter's Sightseeing from Christian McBride's New John, 2018 Mac Avenue Records release. Christian McBride bass, Marcus Strickland, tenor saxophone, Josh Evans, trumpet, and Nasheed Waits, drums. Before that, Sitting on a Cloud from Christian McBride's debut release as a leader, Getting to It, 1995 Verve Records release. Christian McBride, bass, composer, Roy Hargrove, flugelhorn, Cyrus Chestnut, piano, Lewis Nash, drums. Before that, we heard another selection from Getting to It, In a Hurry. Christian McBride, bass, composer, Roy Hargrove, trumpet this time, Joshua Redmond, tenor saxophone, Steve Turay, trombone, Cyrus Chestnut, piano, Lewis Nash, drums. Before that, Baubles, Bangles, and Beads from Christian McBride's 2011 Mac Avenue Records release, Conversations with Christian. It is a duet with Roy Hargrove on trumpet and Christian McBride on bass. Before that, we heard Getting to It from the Christian McBride Big Band, the Grammy-winning 2017 Mac Avenue release, Bringing It. Personnel includes Christian McBride bass, composer, producer, arranger, Steve Wilson, alto saxophone, soprano saxophone, flute, Xavier Davis, piano, Ron Blake, tenor saxophone, and Quincy Phillips, drums. Before that, we open the program with our theme from Nina Simone, I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl, from the very best of Nina Simone, Sugar in My Bowl, 1967-1972. This was originally recorded in 1967. This is from a 1998 RCA BMG compilation. And we'll hear a little more from Christian McBride as we continue to listen to Wayne Shorter's Sightseeing right here on Sugar in My Bowl on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar My Bowl continues. We'll be right back.
2 years ago, we had Wayne Shorter Weekend, and we brought Wayne in a couple of different settings, and he got a key to the city, and the place was packed to the gills, and to see Wayne Shorter be received in his hometown it was just so heartwarming. You know, it wasn't a dry eye in the house.
Wow. You also brought in the Miles Ahead from Los Angeles when you were doing it there, I think.
That's correct.
Yeah.
I believe we did that in my first season, actually.
Right.
We brought in Vince Mendoza, and we played all of the Miles Davis and Gil Evans material. Terrence Blanchard played that night, I believe, right?
That's right. Yeah.
And Sean Jones, Esperanza Spalding has come out there with me, Pat Metheny, Bruce Hornsby. We've had some really good shows. I even had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar out there. I did a jazz meets sports theme concert. So I had my trio with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar reciting the comedic poetry of Lord Buckley.
Oh, wow.
And then Bernie Williams also played with my trio.
Former Yankee player.
That's right. And my co-host for that concert was the former CBS football announcer Leslie Visser. So that was truly like a meeting of these different worlds of jazz and sports.
And Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is very knowledgeable when it comes to this music anyway. He's like a...
Oh, he's wonderful.
You also started doing television projects as well.
Well, yeah, I got a couple of ones in there. Yeah, well, the Kennedy Center Honors for Sonny.
Right.
And probably the biggest one I've had to date was when I was the co-musical director for the White House tribute to Ray Charles.
Oh.
Yeah, my big band performed, and Ricky Minor was at the helm of that one. And we had a bunch of people that came that night. Demi Lovato, Yolanda Adams, Brittany Howard, Usher, Anthony Hamilton.
Wow.
Shalaya. We had a really, really great night. And we were actually nominated for an Emmy. We didn't win, but just to be nominated, that was pretty deep.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You worked on the James Brown piece.
Right, the Mr. Dynamite
documentary. Yes, that's right.
Which was produced by Mick Jagger.
Right. How did you get into that? Did you just say, okay, I'm your guy? Or they knew?
Well, I think at this point I've earned a reputation that if there's something to be discussed about James Brown, I tend to get on most people's short list.
Right.
But I got to say, that was a huge thrill to be a part of that documentary because it's probably the most thorough documentary I've ever seen on James Brown. I mean, Alex Gibney, the award-winning documentarian, he did some exhaustive research on James Brown. And through the years, I think I've collected pretty much all kinds of video footage you could ever get on James Brown. And they dug up some stuff I didn't even know existed.
Wow.
So that was a thrill being involved in that. And they also focused on James Brown's musical contribution to the world. It wasn't one of those sort of typical tabloid sort of documentaries where they get into the drugs and all of the problems that he had. I mean, you know, you can't really talk about James Brown without getting into that, but they didn't harp on that. You know, this was mostly about the music, and I think all James Brown fans deeply appreciated that.
Oh, definitely. Speaking of the problems of James Brown, though, I heard of an interview where you had indicated that that was how you wound up playing with James Brown, because he had just gotten out of being incarcerated. Could you go into that a little bit?
Yeah, I'll give you the short story. James Brown, he was released from prison in 1991. And as you well remember, once he got out, he was bigger than ever before. He was going on the road. And he had a big HBO. He actually had two HBO specials, one with MC Hammer and then one, this big comeback special. And so 1993, I'm in Europe with Pat Metheny, and we played in this group. It was like the Montreux Festival All-Stars. And we opened for James Brown. And while we're playing, I could see all of James Brown's band members on the side of the stage. And I knew all of them. I had worshipped every last one of them. So seeing them was almost as great as seeing James Brown. So after the set was over, I walk over and I see Danny Ray. I see Martha High and Ron Laster and Charles Sherrill and all these people. I'm like, man, you don't know how much you guys mean to me, and blah, blah, blah. And James Brown had just hired a new drummer. His name was Robert Thompson. We call him Mousy.
You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. My name is Joyce Jones. And what you're listening to in the background is Let's Move from Pat Metheny featuring Christian McBride and Antonio Sanchez from their 2008 Nonesuch release, Day Trip. Pat Metheny, guitar, composer, Christian McBride, bass, Antonio Sanchez, drums. Stay tuned for our On the Bandstand segment with associate producer Hank Williams and more from Christian McBride right here on Sugar in My Bowl, WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl continues.
Good evening, jazz fans. This is Hank Williams, and welcome to On the Bandstand for August 13th. But don't go anywhere. Joyce Jones will be back in a few minutes with another hour of Sugar in My Bowl with tonight's guest, bassist Christian McBride. And you can catch Christian at the Blue Note from September 17th through the 22nd with a Christian McBride situation. And we've got more shows to announce this week, but first we want to thank all those of you who pledged during WBAI's Summer Fun Drive. And if you miss your chance, there's still time to pledge online. Details are on our website, and that'll point you to all sorts of ways you can support the station. But we start this week with guitarist Bill Frizzell, who leads a trio at the Village Vanguard through August 18th. Guitarist Nels Klein is at the Stone with Ben Goldberg on August 14th and at Les Poissons Rouges on the 20th. Drummer Bobby Sanabria leads the Multiverse Big Band at Taino Towers in Harlem for a Tato LaViera tribute on the 15th. Trombonist Craig Harris is at Harlem's Marcus Garvey Park for a free outdoor performance as part of the Jazzmobile series on the 16th. Guitarist Mary Halverson is at the Stone with Ben Goldberg on the 14th and at the Jazz Gallery with Taylor Ho Bynum on the 16th. Pianist Mark Carey's Harlem Session Series makes a special stop at Minton's in Harlem on the 15th and continues with weekly late Saturday night sets at Smoke on the 17th and 24th. Harpist Brandy Younger is with Micaiah McRaven at Brooklyn's Industry City on the 16th. Bassist Ron Carter is at the Jazz in the Valley Festival in Poughkeepsie, New York's Warrius Park on the 18th. poet and multi-instrumentalist, and Goma Hill is at Sisters Uptown Bookstore in Harlem on the 20th, and returns the third Tuesday of every month for the Fat Tuesday's Poetry and Music Showcase. Pianist Harold Mayburn leads a trio at Smalls on the 20th, and leads a quartet at Smoke from the 22nd through the 25th. Drummer Andrew Surreal leads a quartet at the Village Vanguard with guitarist Bill Frizzell and pianist David Vireyes from the 20th to the 25th. Guitarist Julian Lage is at the Jazz Gallery with Chris Davis on the 21st and 22nd. Drummer Terry Lynn Carrington is at the National Jazz Museum in Harlem for a talk on jazz and gender justice on the 22nd. Pianist Vijay Iyer is at the Stone with Matana Roberts on the 24th. And the annual Charlie Parker Jazz Festival returns this month with several events around town. Saxophonist Renee McLean is at the Harlem Rose Garden on the 23rd. Vocalist Dee Dee Bridgewater, saxophonist Ravi Coltrane, harpist Brandy Younger, and vocalist and multi-instrumentalist Camille Thurman are all at Harlem's Marcus Garvey Park for free outdoor performances on the 24th. Saxophonist Lakeisha Benjamin is at Tompkins Square Park to close out the festival on the 25th. Vocalist Catherine Russell is at Dizzy's Club from the 26th through the 28th. Bassist Linda Mahon O is at the Jazz Standard with Fabian Almazan on the 27th and 28th. Pianist David Vireyes is at the Jazz Gallery with Jonathan Blake on the 27th and 28th. Saxophonist James Brandon Lewis leads a trio at The Glove in Brooklyn on the 28th. Finally, saxophonist Gary Bartz is at Smoke for a Charlie Parker tribute from the 29th through September 1st. That's all for this week. If you missed anything, full listings are on our blog. Go to sugarinmybowl.org and click the link for the blog, where you'll also find reviews, features, and jazz news. And sugar is spelled S-U-G-A. Playlists and audio from this and previous shows are also on the website, and if you're on Twitter and Facebook, look for us there too, where we'd appreciate likes, tweets, and shares with your friends. And if you really like what we do, please help the station stay on the air by pledging whatever you can, and consider becoming a WBAI buddy with a monthly pledge. The Support WBAI link on our website has details, and we're grateful for any help you can give the station. This is Hank Williams signing off. With our new weekly schedule, we'll be back on air next Tuesday night at 10 p.m., and of updated event listings online. Either way you connect, we'll see you next time on the Bandstand.
This is Christian McBride, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web.
And I got to be good friends with Mousie. We're still best friends to this day. And Mousie was sort of my, for lack of a better term, he was sort of my sponsor into the James Brown world. Because a lot of those James Brown guys, they followed jazz, so they knew who I was, and as my career started to progress over the next couple of years, I met James Brown at the Apollo the following year, and I met him again in Europe the year after that. He came to New York in 96, and by that time, I had two CDs out. I had been on a number of CDs with a lot of other people, so James Brown knew who I was. And at the end of the night, I'm hanging out backstage, and James Brown invited me to dinner with him and his posse. And that was just the ultimate thrill of a lifetime. Even now, I think back on it like, wow, I can't believe I went to dinner with James Brown and his crew. So we sat there, we started talking about jazz, and James Brown always prided himself on knowing what was going on in the jazz world. So we talked about Chick Corea, Miles Davis, Cannonball Adderley, Coltrane, Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers. I mean, he was up on his stuff, you know, and I think he was so impressed with that particular conversation, he then invited me to come and play at his birthday bash a few months after that. So that was the first time I played with James Brown. But I wasn't naive. I knew that James Brown had a reputation for being quite short-tempered, mm-hmm. and there could be quite a bit of melodrama in his world. So I knew that at some point, if I got too close, I was either going to get burned or stung, or both. And yes, that's exactly what happened. But I expected it, so it wasn't as bad when it happened. You know, I think James Brown, I don't think he liked his band members getting too close to an outsider. Because by that time, like I said, I had some CDs out of my own. I won a couple of polls in Downbeat. And
right.
I think James Brown's band members were like, oh, yeah, Christian this, Christian that, and Christian that. And one day, Mousy called me up. He said, hey, man, your name came up at rehearsal today. And he said, man, I think James Brown's getting a little tired of hearing everybody talking about you.
Oh.
I was like, uh-oh. I was like, well, you stop talking about me. He's like, y'all think McBride doing something. He ain't doing nothing. Oh. He ain't doing it like we doing it. I was like, oh, Lord, here we go. I talked to him on the phone one day, and he was like, son, you ain't doing nothing. Everybody telling you you're great. You can't play no bass. You ain't got no talent.
Oh, Lord. But one good thing, one of the other good things, because I'm sure there were several good things, but one of the great things that came out of it is that you were able to celebrate James Brown's release of Soul on Top.
Yes, well, that was the ultimate redemption. In 2005, I was named creative chair of the L.A. Philharmonic's Jazz Series, and I thought, well, with this new position, I got to shoot for the stars. Let me see if I can get Mr. Brown out here. I knew it would be a long shot because he wasn't known to do those types of collaborations, but I said, well, it's really not going to happen if I don't ask, you know. So I called his manager, and much to my shock, he said, yeah. So on September the 6th, 2006, James Brown sang with my big band at the Hollywood Bowl.
Yay. And later he transitioned on Christmas Day that year.
That's right, 3 months later. And when he transitioned, we were putting into place a Soul on Top concert in New York.
Wow.
Yeah, because after the L.A. concert, his manager said, you know, Mr. McBride, we got to get together quick and figure out when we can do this in New York. And so we were trying to figure out where we would do it, at the Apollo, at the Beacon. And James Brown said, nah, we got to do Radio City.
Oh.
I was like, well, I don't know if we'll sell enough tickets at Radio City. And his manager, Mr. Bobby, was like, yeah, let's not fool with Radio City. Let's do something else. Yeah, I'm down with that.
James Brown was scheduled to do, as he did, New Year's Eve. B.B. King.
B.B. King.
Yeah.
Right. That's right.
Rest in peace.
Yeah.
Oh!
You know, I was thinking about your time at Verve and your... Uh-oh. Is that a dog?
Excuse my dog.
Okay.
Damn these dogs.
What kind of dog do you have?
We have two dogs.
Oh.
We have a beagle named Ella Fitzgerald. That's
Uh-oh.
Who's making all the noise.
Okay. Not Memorex.
That's right. That's right. And we have a Bichon named Jesse James. We didn't name Jesse. Our niece named him.
Okay.
Yeah, so we have a legendary jazz singer and a bank robber.
What I was going to ask was, when you were at Verve,
yes.
When you started recording as a leader, not that you had to rely on Verve to find people, but, well, of course, you weren't in a rush to record as a leader anyway because of the timing. We had talked about that in the past.
Right.
But do you believe that making a recording was easier then since you were on that label that primarily signed a lot of the people that you wound up having on your earlier recordings?
It was probably easier in the sense that as an artist, there was a lot less work. Like, all I had to do was concentrate on the music,
right.
You know. But I think now, yeah, it's so much harder to, well, let me back up. It's easier to make a recording now.
Right.
But to get it out there is a challenge because there's so many different channels and ways to release your music now. And it could potentially just get lost in the ether, you know, because there's Spotify,
right.
There's Tidal, there's YouTube,
right.
There's Pandora. I mean, it's really hard to know where to put your music that it can get noticed if you're not a pop star. But the good part is that you do own your music and you get to control your music however you want to. So I guess in a way, you're back to square one at really doing some homegrown cultivation of your fan base, you know. Whereas when you were on a major record label, you could just kind of bandwagon the fans of that particular label or your label mates or things like that. You know, there was a lot of cross-pollinization, you know, between artists and records and things like that. So it's harder to do that now. But those days at Verve in the 90s, those are some really, really good days. Being part of a major record label, to have that sort of big machine backing you and getting out there and getting to know all of the people who worked at those labels. And they're still my friends, you know, Chuck Mitchell, Richard Seidel, Rachel Lewis, all those people that worked on my records back then. It was like a family, you know.
Thank you.
also, I notice with artists these days that because of the way record labels are, of course, people are able to create their own recordings.
Right.
But I often think that some people probably shouldn't. Like you thought yourself that you needed to wait. And it seems like a lot of younger artists now, they just, okay, I know how to play. I got my buddies. We're going to make something. And, you know, I'm going to lead my band. They don't, you know, okay, you're a jazz house kid, so you can speak to this.
I mean, look, anybody can do what they want to do with music. But I think if they put something out and it's not ripe, I don't think those records will go anywhere. I mean, you can make the argument that they sort of take up space from the music that is ready to go and is ripe and it has something to say. But I think throughout the history of the record business, there's always been those kind of records. For every 20 great albums, there's probably 20,000 records that no one knows about that really never made it past first base.
Right.
You know? Yes, I mean, there's always going to be artists out there that will make ill-timed recordings, you know? And it's okay. You know, it's part of a long journey,
sure.
You know.
And I'm certainly not trying to tell people don't do it, but it would be nice if you waited
learn.
A little while. Yes, they'll learn.
They'll
hopefully.
Learn.
Hopefully.
Because what'll happen is like 5-10 years down the line, they'll look back and go, ooh, I shouldn't have done that. You know, at least we hope so.
Yeah. So now I need to get current based on
some
things that we talked about in the past. There was something that you were doing, radio. You eventually wound up doing Jazz Night in America. And at that time, you had the Sirius XM program
that's produced by Mark.
I'm
still doing both of those.
Excellent.
Yep, Lowdown every Saturday afternoon. The SiriusXM show, that kind of comes whenever I can make it happen.
Yeah.
I tend to do a bunch of shows in bulk because it's a format that's loosely based on Marion McPartland's Piano Jazz, where I have another artist come and we play duets and we talk. And there's also a little comedy routine in the middle of it. But, you know, I have to be in town to do that. So I think this year I've only done maybe 3 or 4 shows, which is not much, you know. And I have another block of time in the late fall to do some more. But the Jazz Night in America one, that's every week.
Right.
Since that's an NPR show, I have to record the scripts for that show, whether I'm home or on the road.
Oh, okay. So you get into a studio wherever you are and then record.
Exactly.
Excellent.
Yep.
How many producers you have working with you on that one?
Just one. There's a senior producer by the name of Katie Simon. And there's a couple of different script writers, but there's one solid producer on the show.
Okay. Do you come up with whom you're going to get together with, or is that something that's presented to you?
No, that's part of the NPR WBGO Jazz and Lincoln Center team.
Oh.
They surely ask me for suggestions, but for the most part, the three-headed team of WBGO, NPR, and Jazz and Lincoln Center pretty much do all of the... I mean, Jazz and Lincoln Center actually produces much of the material that you hear on that show because they're so self-contained. You know, they have their own studios, they have their own venue, so much of the material happens there, but there's some stuff we do off-site, like we covered the Ojai Festival in California, the Banff Festival up in Canada.
Oh, yeah.
We did Wayne Shorter's group up in Detroit. So I just come in and read a script.
Okay. Two of the shows that stood out for me, I mean, there have been so many, but two that really stand out for me, it was one that you did with Joey DeFrancesco. That was really nice.
Oh, thank you. That was fun.
I really enjoyed that one. And the one that you did with Jesmia Horn, because we had her on as well, and she is such a delight to speak with.
Oh, she is. She's just amazing.
Yeah.
She's something else.
And she has something new coming in August. For
is that right?
That.
Okay.
Yeah,
she's bad. I love her.
When I say stop, stop on a dime, no wasting time, just do what I say. It must be my way or the highway. When I say go, don't miss a beat, be quick on your feet, hurry up and let's roll. You won't ever have another like me, so I shouldn't have to beg and plead. You know everything I do makes you smile, makes you proud, makes you wild. Come on now, I'm not a child, so concentrate on me. And when I want, give me your love, give me your time, what's good is all mine. I want it all of it now, give it to me, don't ask how. When I say, light it. La di la di da 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 la da 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 la di da 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 la ba di da 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 la di la 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 di di ba ba da 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 Say stop, stop on a dime, no wasting time, just do what I say, it must be my way or the highway, when I say go, don't miss a beat, you're flipping your feet, hurry up and let's roll, you won't ever have another like me, so I shouldn't have to beg and plead, you know everything I do makes you smile, makes you proud, makes you wild, come on now, I'm not a child, so concentrate on me when I want, give me your love, give me your time, what's good is all mine. Give it to me. Don't hesitate.
So you're still involved with the National Jazz Museum in Harlem?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, that's where I record the Lowdown, my SiriusXM show.
Oh, wow. You know, when I visited, you were actually in the Sirius building. We're on 6th
That's
Avenue.
Right. You probably saw one of the last shows I did there.
I saw two of the episodes you recorded, one with Ethan Iverson and the other with Vijay Iyer.
Right. That's right. Those were two very exciting shows.
Oh, yeah. Some members of Earth, Wind, and Fire just happened to be walking
through. That's right. That's right. You saw all that. And I'm very excited that, I don't know if you heard, but Earth, Wind, and Fire is going to be one of the Kennedy Center honorees this year.
Oh, no. Wow. Oh, that's wonderful.
Yep.
Are you still doing the Kennedy Center honors? Are you involved in that?
No. You know, when they salute a jazz musician, then they have their group of jazz consultants.
Oh,
but
okay.
Since there are no jazz musicians this year, I won't be involved. Not that I know of.
Something else I want to check up on, the Philadelphia experiment part two. Has there been any other discussion about that?
Well, we actually have, believe it or not, we have two recordings in the can.
Oh!
Two live recordings.
What?
So we just need to figure out when and where and how to put them out.
Okay.
We recorded live at the Newport Jazz Festival in 2017.
Okay.
We recorded live at the Monterey Jazz Festival in 2014 with Booker T. Jones.
Oh! From Booker T and the MGs.
That's right. And we also recorded live at the Bonnaroo Festival back in 2007. So we have a bunch of live shows that have been recorded. So at some point they'll come out.
Oh, goodness. So is it still the three of you? You, Uri Kane, and...
Uri Kane and Questlove.
Questlove, Oh, wow. With an occasional special guest. Okay.
Almost every show we've done, we've had a special guest. More often than not, it's been DJ Logic. He'll come and play with us. Pat Martino played with us in New York when the band first started. Booker T. Jones in Monterey. My friend, the actress, Gina Gershon, sat in with us in Bonnaroo.
Is she a vocalist?
Yes. No.
What's her story? Because I've seen pictures on Instagram with Gina Gershon and you, and I'm like, okay, what is she doing?
She actually plays the Jew's harp.
Wow.
So we got some funk Jew's harp on there.
All right, now.
Gina, what's that thing you got?
Jew's harp, Christian.
Sure is funky.
Yeah?
I never heard no funk Jew's harp before.
Gotta eat it up.
person. Then what happened? No, he didn't.
Yep.
You got a lot of gravy on them chitlins.
Like it greasy, Christian. Give me some grease.
I can hear that. Hit it again. One more time.
That's greasy.
Why don't we switch the key a little bit? Where are we gonna go now?
I think we should go to a greasy D.
Look out! Ain't nothing like D.
Oh yeah, it's your favorite. Here comes.
Look out.
How come you like D so much?
Cause James Brown loved D.
That's right.
Down D. Funky D. Down D. The people's D. Cheese D. Fried fish D. Since we in L.A., have to call it Compton D.
Cheese D burger.
Take this break. Put some funk on it.
Chili cheese fries.
Look out. With ketchup.
And tartar sauce.
Oh, look out. Don't put it. Old tartar sauce. How about we go to G?
All right. Here come. You ready?
I'm always ready.
You sure?
I think so. Look out. Sound like? Look out. Look out.
That's what the Indian chants I do.
That's blues too. That's all blues.
Hungry for love. Someone please feed me.
We say we take it on out.
All right.
And go get some fried fish.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But out of all of these things that are going on, the one that actually remains the most constant other than Jazz Night in America is Jazz House Kids that
yes.
Melissa and I run together.
Yes.
Trying to raise up the youngins.
Yes.
You know? We had our annual gala event back in May, and that's been such a rewarding thing to do. And some of the hottest young musicians on the scene now, like Julian Lee and Coleman Hughes, they're former Jazz House Kids students.
Oh.
So we're really proud of all of the kids that have come through our program and the parents who bring them.
When the kids are going through, when the young people are going through Jazz House Kids, does the subject of presentation come up, how to behave on
Absolutely.
Stage?
Absolutely. Indeed. Indeed. And I'm glad you bring that up because I'm one of these people. I mean, I don't know how people feel about it, but when people talk about why jazz doesn't have a bigger audience, in many ways, it could be our own doing because our presentation oftentimes is so lackadaisical. It's almost the complete antithesis of how we create the music because we take such finite care of the notes that we play and how the music goes down, but how we present it is often underwhelming.
Well, I know oftentimes I notice it immediately from vocalists. They don't interact with the audience. They sort of go into one song and then to the other, and they don't engage. There's no banter. Banter is fun.
You gotta have that. And you know, for whatever reasons, I know when musicians talk about you don't need that, you know, look at Miles,
yeah.
right? And it's just like, when is everybody going to stop using that tired excuse? Like, well, Miles didn't do it, so why should we? Miles Davis was one person.
Right, right.
You know, Art Blakey did it, Cannonball Adderley did it,
right.
Horace Silver did it, you know,
right.
what about them?
Right.
You know, all the great vocalists did it. Ella Fitzgerald,
right.
Sarah Vaughan, Betty Carter.
Dee Dee Bridgewater.
Oh, man. She, for my money, she's one of the greatest performers in any genre in the world right now.
Yes.
Seeing Dee Dee Bridgewater perform, you're going to get high-level music, but you're also going to get a show.
That's right. So, very quickly, I know our time is short. Two of your projects I really want to talk about. Tip City being one.
Yes.
And, unfortunately, at this point, there's nothing documented, so I'll have to get some sound from YouTube.
Thank you.
listening to? Cars? Radio?
Freddie Hubbard.
Oh, yay, Freddie.
That's right.
Ready for Freddie.
That's right.
So Tip City.
Yeah, so Tip City, yes. Tip City is a trio that I put together with Emmett Cohen and this amazing guitarist from Akron, Ohio named Dan Wilson. And Dan Wilson, I actually just got him signed to Mac Avenue, so you're going to be hearing a lot more from Dan in the future. He's just such a brilliant, brilliant guitarist. That trio actually came together initially as just a bridge between my old trio with Christian Sands and Ulysses Owens Jr. to the new John, because I knew that the new John, stylistically, that might be a wide stretch for some. So I said, well, let me come up with sort of like a middle, you know, like I don't have the trio anymore with Christian and Ulysses, and I figured like some might think the new John might be a little too out, a little too progressive, at least from what they're used to seeing with me.
I love the new John, just so you know. That's one of my favorite projects at this point.
Thank you very, very, very much. So that's why I came up with Tip City. And Tip City, of course, that was a phrase that both Mulgrew Miller and James Williams used to use when the music was swinging real hard. They said it was tipping.
Okay. And a Christian McBride situation. Now that is an amazing, that's like you go out and, ooh, I really can't wait to hear more from that. Unfortunately,
well,
we haven't seen it yet.
We're going to be at the Blue Note, and I sincerely hope you come down to hear us.
It's you on bass, Patrice Russian on keys, DJ Logic turntables, and Jahi Sundance also on turntables.
Yep.
You have two sets of turntablists?
Yep.
Allison Williams vocals and Ron Blake saxophones.
That's it.
Wow.
And I got to say that we just completed our first tour with that band. We were in Europe for pretty much the whole month of July. I am beyond excited. I knew it was going to be a good tour, but I didn't know it was going to be like that. So I'm really excited by what's going to happen at the Blue Note. So I sincerely hope you show up.
Oh, excellent. Well, I am definitely looking forward to seeing that. Is there anything in the works for recording?
My next recording is going to be my big band.
Okay.
I just completed
my next big band. Because I know you love that big band.
Yes. Yes, and so we did our new recording back in February, and we had my old buddy, Joey DeFrancesco, and Mark Whitfield as guests, and we're saluting the old Jimmy Smith, Wes Montgomery albums.
Oh, wow.
So I'm playing the role of Oliver Nelson and Richard Davis.
Okay. That's right. Excellent. Do you have a date on that, or is that, we just keep an eye out for it?
Yeah, I actually just finished editing it, so sometime soon. I'll make sure I keep you in the loop on the release date, but it'll be real soon.
And is the Christian McBride's new John still a working project?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got some gigs coming up next month. We're playing the Chicago Jazz Festival. We're going up to Canada to play some gigs and something else. I can't remember. But, yeah, that's still going.
Oh, good.
Everybody's so busy doing their own thing, particularly Nasheed Waits and
Marcus
Strickland. All those guys are just, you know, Josh Evans. They all got their own thing going on. But when I can get them, we're going to definitely keep that band going.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Christian McBride, for sharing more time with us and giving us an update on what you've been up to and what we have to look forward to.
Joyce Jones, you are the best, my friend. Always a thrill speaking with you. Don't ever lose that positive energy, man.
You either. I don't think you can.
You're the best.
Be well. Peace.
All right, my dear.
Whatsoever we play, it's got to be funky.
You're listening to the closing moments of Sugar in My Bowl. My name is Joyce Jones, and our guest for this evening has been bassist, composer, band leader, and yes, I keep saying because it's true, he is a contender for the hardest working man in show business, Christian McBride. What you're listening to in the background is courtesy of YouTube. It's Sleep Talk from a Christian McBride situation. They are scheduled for some dates at the Blue Note from September 17th through the 22nd. This is courtesy of 23DB Productions in 2016, live at SF Jazz Part 1. Christian McBride, electric bass, Patrice Russian, keyboards and vocals, Ron Blake, tenor saxophone, Allison Williams, lead vocals, DJ Logic, turntables, and Jahi Sundance, turntables as well. Before that, in the wee small hours of the morning, from Christian McBride's Tip City, also courtesy of YouTube, and Charlie Parcham, posted in 2017, Christian McBride on bass, Dan Wilson on guitar, and Emmett Cohen on piano. Before that, we heard Chitlins and Gefilte Fish from Christian McBride, Conversations with Christian. This is the 2011 Mack Avenue release. Gina Gershon on Jews or Jaw harp, and Christian McBride on bass. Before that, we heard Ain't It the Truth from the Philadelphia Experiment, and the release is titled The Philadelphia Experiment, 2001 Rope-A-Dope release. Christian McBride, bass, Rory Kane, keyboards, and Amir Questlove Thompson on drums. Before that, we heard, because we just had to hear it, Jasmia Horn, When I Say, from her upcoming release on Concord Records, Love and Liberation. Jasmia Horn vocals, Victor Gould piano, Ben Williams bass, Jameson Ross drums. Before that, we heard Work from Chick Corea, Christian McBride, and Brian Blade. Trilogy 2 is the name of that 2018 Universal Music release. Chick Corea piano, Christian McBride bass, Brian Blade drums. Before that, we heard Yusta Could from the Christian McBride Big Band, another selection from the 2017 Grammy-winning Mack Avenue release, Bringing It. Sugar in My Bowl will be back next Tuesday with another special guest. Anne-Marie Hendrickson and her Rhett Mansion is scheduled next, and we'll hear more from A Christian McBride Situation right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Stay tuned.
Hello, bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.